third episode of the Radix Copycast. I'm Emily, I'm Radix's Research and Marketing Executive, and here today I'm joined by Fiona, who is our MD and Lead Copywriter here at Radix.
Hello.
And we're also joined by James Henry for this episode. James is a television scriptwriter working on comedy and drama projects. He has previously written for Green Wing, Bob the Builder and Shaun the Sheep, and currently has several drama projects in development at the BBC and several independent production companies.
Hello.
This episode, we're going to be discussing storytelling and B2B marketing. In particular, just what do we mean by storytelling in B2B marketing? And also, how should marketers tell stories to potential customers? So, just what do we mean by storytelling in B2B marketing? Fiona?
Yes, so storytelling is obviously this big buzzword in B2B marketing at the moment. And we've seen over the past few months lots of different things cited as examples of storytelling. And obviously it's something that we're very interested in as copywriters because we want to tell stories that are going to get our clients' customers engaged. But I think that some of the things that we see talked about as storytelling aren't really storytelling in the true sense of the word. So I've seen, for example, things like unboxing videos described as storytelling, or presenting an infographic in the way that it looks a bit like a Facebook timeline as storytelling. I just think that thinking of those things as stories is probably missing some of the point as to what an engaging story actually is, which is why we've got James here as the storytelling expert to talk about what are the elements of a story that make it a good and engaging story.
Yeah.
Over
now,
to you.
Yeah, well, I'm now thinking about how you can make a story about an unboxing video, which is kind of a slightly weird train of thought. Yeah, there are certain underlying structures which differentiate a story from just being a list of stuff that happens. And then I always think the best way to describe this is when my dad goes to a lot of conferences and things, he tells me about it afterwards. And it's not a story, it's a list. It's a list of him going on the train and then the menu. And it normally sort of culminates in whether the toilets were clean or not. He gets very excited about that. And it's just a list of stuff that happens. He doesn't seem to understand that's not a story. It's not in the nicest possible way. And I love my dad. It's not an engaging story. And what makes a story is there's a sort of underlying structure. A story tends to have, you could say beginning, middle and end, and that's slightly confusing because there's no reason you can't start a story at the end and work back to the beginning. You can see Memento, that's a film that does that. But stories tend to have three acts. You have the first act, which is the setup, which introduces the character, location, central conflict, if you like. The second act, which is normally the biggest chunk of the story, which is normally referred to as an escalating series of confrontations. Which can be very dramatic. They can be kung fu fights if you're watching that kind of movie, or it can be something much more talky. It doesn't have to be physical confrontations, but they do sort of have to escalate. Then they get to a point of no return, and then you've got your third act, which is the resolution. And this is a structure that works in plays, as a radio play or theatre play, or episode of television, or a film, or a comic, or just someone sitting telling you a story. A satisfying story tends to have this sort of underlying three-act structure. Doesn't mean you can follow the three-act structure and you also mustn't have an engaging story. You've got to bring some sort of magic to it, which is hopefully, you know, how I have a job. But that sort of structure does tend to be there. So it's just worth thinking about, you know, what actually makes up a story as opposed to a list of stuff that happens.
So what is it about this kind of three-act structure that actually engages audiences and draws them in and makes them feel they want to hear the whole story?
Well, I'm not sure having a three-act structure automatically engages the audience, but I think the human brain is hardwired to expect stories to have a certain shape. So if your story has got three acts, in whatever kind of proportion to each other, that's just enough for the brain to sort of click into, I'm experiencing a story here. And then what you have to do is bring the engaging kind of elements to it.
And what do you see would be those engaging elements? What do you think a story needs to have in it in order for it to be appealing to an audience?
I think it's got to have a character who is relatable. I don't really like that word, but it's got to be someone that you care about. You don't have to like them necessarily, but you have to understand what it is they're trying to achieve and then sort of sympathise with them, and you really want them to succeed. And I think that's the difference between, we're talking about unboxing videos. If you're with the person, if it really matters to the person what's in that box and it's what they wanted, then you're going to be engaged. It may actually have three acts, that an unboxing video, but it's not something you're really going to care about. 8 people maybe will care about it. Most people aren't going to. So you can have the three act structure that doesn't automatically make it an engaging story, but it sort of takes it up a notch into something the brain will recognise as a story.
Yeah, and I think this whole idea of having a relatable character is really important for our work when we're trying to tell stories that engage audiences. Because ultimately, we're trying to write stories that persuade people eventually to buy something. So we need to draw them into this whole world in order to keep them watching or to keep them reading to the end point where we get to pitch the product. And having a relatable character, I think, is really important. A lot of companies seem to be into this idea of brand storytelling, where they make the company the character and they try and give the brand a personality and present it like that. But I think for B2B, where you're making more kind of rational sales based on rather than emotional sales, where you're expecting your customer to have an emotional bond with your brand, I think it's more important to present this character as the customer. So when you're telling a story, you're telling a story about your customer rather than you're telling a story about your own brand. And you kind of present to them a vision of their world and the conflicts and the problems that they're going through, and then present your solution, which is generally the product or service that you want to sell to them.
So in the case of you'd essentially be having... As director, as the story writer, you'd be putting the customer, casting them as the hero in the piece.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good approach to it. And I think this is where the humble case study comes into its own, because the case studies have been kind of B2B marketing staples for years. But they've kind of degenerated into this format where you've got, oh, so-and-so company sells XXX to XXX, and here's the problem that they were facing, and here in five bullet points is the solution that we sold them, and here's a quote from the customer at the end. Whereas I think you can make a much more engaging story out of a case study by taking the customer's point of view and focusing on one or more actual people within the customer organisation and the problems that they were facing in their kind of daily job, and how they were trying to resolve these problems. And then eventually, like a deus ex machina, your company comes in with this amazing piece of software or piece of hardware that solves those problems. And I think that, I mean, that's presenting it in more of a journalistic kind of way. It's how it might appear in a feature article in Wired or something like that. It's where you take the very human aspect of the story and present these kind of human conflicts and then present the solution, rather than the kind of tired format that a lot of companies take with case studies. Now, I think there's a really good opportunity there to turn case studies into much better, more engaging stories.
I think a lot of the most satisfying stories are about characters. A character wants something, then they get what they want, but that's not the end of the story, because then they realise they have a deeper need, and that's the resolution, is going for something much bigger and more emotionally satisfying. So if you think of Luke Skywalker, starts off, he discovers Princess Leia. He gets the hologram of Princess Leia, and what he wants to do is go and rescue a princess. And at two-thirds point of the story, he's got what he wanted. He's rescued the princess, but that actually opens up a much bigger story, and he realises what he needs to do is destroy the Death Star and, you know, save the universe. So that's kind of worth thinking about, where your character, your hero, your protagonist, they have a primary sort of need, but once they've got that, then they have to think about a primary want, and underline that as the greater need as well. So that's a way of sort of expanding on the story and then making it a bit deeper, if that helps.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, you can say, you know, they had this problem, they used this product to overcome the solution, but it opened up this much wider vista of a challenge or opportunity.
Yeah,
exactly. I think one of the difficulties we have is that we have to get the story over. I mean, we don't have the luxury of 2.5-3 hours like you have with a Hollywood movie. I think we have to get the story across as quickly as possible, because you're not going to engage an audience for a B2B buying audience for a piece of software for 3 hours. And if you're going to make a video, you have to kind of get the story across in literally 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's, how do you set up this situation? How do you create this empathetic character? And how do you present all the conflicts and then present the solution in 2 minutes? It's quite a challenge.
In Hollywood films, that third act, that resolution, is where the story gets kind of richer and thicker and more interesting, and all the big special effects come out. And obviously in business, you've got to go, boom, here's the resolution, that's going to solve your problems. I agree, you just haven't got the time to do it. So it's the same shape of three acts. Clearly you don't have the same proportions or time to work with. But I think if you know what the underlying kind of structure is, then you can start to work out how to tell your story more effectively.
For the the second half of this month's podcast, I wanted us to talk about how should marketers in particular sort of tell stories to potential customers in B2B, but sort of using storytelling techniques, and also whether or not we've had the misfortune of stumbling across conflicts with the idea of what storytelling means in B2B. Fiona?
Yeah, so it's something that we've seen a lot of people focusing on very recently is this idea of brand storytelling. And I think if I've understood it correctly, what people are meaning by brand storytelling is that a brand, a company, gives itself a personality and tells stories about how it operates. And I think it's part of this trend towards companies becoming publishers. So you're seeing quite a few large companies turning their websites almost into quasi-journalistic sites where they've got a lot of articles and videos about how things are done. But what I think, or what I'm seeing quite a lot there, is that a lot of those stories are focused on the company itself and what the company is doing, how its products are made and so on, and less on the customer and what the customer stories are and what the customer needs. And I think they're probably missing an opportunity there, because I think if we're talking about storytelling, the customer, basically, if you're buying something from a large software vendor or a large networking vendor, you probably don't care that much about the brand itself. You're probably not very emotionally invested in its fortunes. You want to know that that company can solve the problems that you've got. So therefore, I think the stories that should be told are the stories around the customer's problem rather than the stories about the company itself. So I think what's interesting to explore is some of the ways that companies can tell engaging stories about their customers, and maybe some of the techniques they can borrow from classic storytelling to be able to tell those stories in an engaging way. And I know that we've looked previously in a slideshow that we did at the seven basic plots that seem to underpin most of the stories that get told. So it'd be quite interesting to look at how companies can use those to create stories about their customers. So maybe James can talk us through some of those plots and how they work, and we could look at which ones might be useful for marketers to use.
Yeah, I'll just I'll rattle through them very quickly. But there's this concept that all these stories all have the three act structure that we talked about earlier. But there's a concept that all stories can be sort of boiled down to one of these seven very basic plots. We're going right back to mythology and fairy stories, that kind of thing. So the oldest one is overcoming the monster, which goes back to Gilgamesh. It's all about a hero, a sort of lone knight, sets forth to confront and hopefully destroy a terrible monster in its lair, which could be Jaws. Equally, it could be James Bond going to a sort of a baddie's lair, really, to fight him. So it doesn't have to be a very old-fashioned story. You can treat it in a new way. That's overcoming the monster. There's comedy, which is more sort of comedy in a Shakespearean sense, which is two star-crossed lovers who sort of struggle through various adversities to sort of, you know, come together and form a glorious union. Tragedy is kind of almost the flip side of comedy. It's kind of a hero's fall, really. So it's, you see The Social Network, that's kind of a great example of a tragedy of a hero who really wants to achieve something, but in doing that throws so much of himself away that he kind of becomes the monster in an Overcoming the Monster story. So it's almost kind of circular as well. Rebirth, an interesting one. That is a hero, almost an anti-hero, someone who's on the path downwards, someone who's probably about to become a monster, and something comes along that kind of turns their life around. It's like they see their life from outside. So I think of Silas Marner, or even Groundhog Day, actually, as a character who's kind of in this sort of downward spiral, and then something weird happens and he sees his life a different way, and it makes him change the way he approaches life, and he becomes more of a hero. Voyage and Return is a very simple one. Alice in Wonderland, if you like. It's a character who comes from a completely normal, mundane place, then sets out into a weird, topsy-turvy world with a whole new set of rules, and then when they return to the mundane world, they've learned something from that experience. So I'm really rattling through these. The Quest is the sort of classic fantasy story, really, of a group of heroes who have to traverse a dangerous landscape in order to do something. So if it's Lord of the Rings, it's a group of hobbit and friends have to go and drop a ring into a volcano, essentially. You stretch that out over three books. And the last one is Rags to Riches, which is a sort of oppressed underdog kind of character who, through their own efforts, gradually raise themselves up into becoming something much more glamorous and successful. So it's a Dick Whittington story, or it's Pretty Woman, or pretty much all sports movies are Rags to Riches. So it can be a whole team of people who are at the bottom of the league, and then the story follows as they gradually kind of fight their way right up to the top, and the resolution is then becoming the best. They've got from zero to hero, is Rags to Riches.
So I think the thing for us from looking at those basic plots is that we generally want to tell positive stories.
Yep.
And we want to cast our hero, who is the customer, in a story whereby they overcome a problem that makes life better for them, but also makes life better for the organisation that they're working for. So I think some of those plots are more relevant for the kind of stories we want to tell than others. So I don't think tragedy is really something that we would want to use an awful lot. But certainly a story like Rags to Riches is definitely the kind of story we might want to tell about how a customer organisation has used our client's product to transform the fortunes of the organisation. And equally, the overcoming the monster, I mean, there are lots of organisations out there who have a real problem at the heart of the organisation that's preventing them from getting where they want to be, and this problem can be framed in terms of it being a monster.
Yeah, it's a looming
lurking
threat
at the heart of the organisation. Yeah. Yes,
it could be a deadline. It doesn't have to be a shark. It could be a deadline. It could be some sort of great technical problem that's on the horizon that's going to have to be confronted one way or the other. I mean, Rags to Riches is certainly the obvious one. The downside of that is probably the least emotionally engaging one. Because it is a hero through his own effort, sort of stepping up, and then making to the top. But that's not automatically that interesting. So Dick Whittington isn't, to be honest, that interesting a story. I mean, Pretty Woman's quite interesting as a story because she starts off so very low. So that's although it is the most obvious go-to one, the downside of that is it's not inherently interesting. So you're going to have to bring something to it to make it interesting. Whereas I think overcoming the monster, probably in danger of being overused, because it's a really good one where you're really invested in the hero of that particular story. But it's quite easy to overplay it to a sort of parodic degree, which I think a lot of people do.
Well, I think possibly Rags to Riches is interesting from a business point of view.
Yeah, well, is it? It is business. It's classic business story, isn't it? Yeah.
Every business wants to get bigger and grow and make more money.
No,
and that's why I think that the Rags to Riches story is probably very relevant for what we do. But I've also seen other types of these plots used to quite good effect. Maybe they're not exactly the plot as they're kind of conceived in classic storytelling. We have seen quite a good video by a company called ActTask, who we have done some writing for, but we didn't have anything to do with this video, where they kind of plunge the customer, who is actually a marketing manager, into this chaotic world where they can't cope with anything that's going on around them, and they can't see any way out, and eventually obviously they find the collaboration software that ActTask is selling and use that to get out of that world. But that's almost like the Voyage and Return, the way they've done it, so they kind of plunged into it.
They do
chaos.
All blur into each other, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Do you think the rebirth storyline, if your product has actually been particularly involved in really seriously helping out a company, do you think that would actually have some use in B2B marketing?
I think, can you remind us of what rebirth?
Well, the rebirth story is all about. I mean, I think that's really interesting. It's a classic change of direction kind of story. It's about someone who's on a downward spiral. So if you think of, I mean, Groundhog Day is the comedy version of it, the funny version of it, but it's someone who's on a downward spiral who then sees themselves almost from outside their life and realise they're going to have to sort of pull themselves up by the bootstraps and make something of themselves. So I mean, the really dark version of Silas Marner is a classic one he's a miser and a loner, and he finds an orphan girl, and then through his sort of grudging love for this girl, he just suddenly becomes a better person. So but it's all about completely making yourself over into a new person, which, you know, in business terms is kind of interesting and could be relevant.
Yeah, so I think as long as you can get the target customer to recognise that they too may be on this downward spiral and that they need to pull themselves out of it somehow, I think it can be a very powerful story, yes.
I was imagining it more as a sort of post-sale case study scenario, to be honest, where you've already made the sale but you're trying to recount the event to others, and sometimes you can obviously make it look like everything comes out on top at the end.
Yes.
I mean, it's a positive story, which is, you know, good from your point of view. That's what you want.
Yes, and if you were doing it as a case study, you'd have to they'd have to approve the fact that you were telling the story about them, that, you know, they were in this terrible place, which is if we're talking about case studies, it's often difficult to get the customer to sign off on anything, let alone portraying them possibly in a negative light and then turning it around.
I think that's also, though, part of the problem with some initiatives at marketing for B2B companies is that while they need to present their customers as human, they sometimes need to present themselves as human a bit, that they're not these huge, great, big, towering brands that are awesome all the time, because there's times when they're not. So they need to build in that kind of thing into their marketing, I feel.
Yeah, and absolutely. And this is where I think elements of that brand storytelling come in. It's where you're focusing on individuals within the company and portraying the human side of the company. I think that's something that's very necessary as well. But I don't think companies should over-focus on the whole brand storytelling as being about the company rather than about the customer. There needs to be a balance. In fact, not even a balance. I think the weight of the storytelling needs to be about the customer rather than about the company itself, I think.
So, James, how do you go about telling story? Do you go straight to script, or are there other processes involved when you're actually trying to compile this all this knowledge and ideas kind of together into a script?
No, it's definitely a process. I mean, I very, very rarely go straight to writing a script with dialogue and instructions for actors and stuff. I do an outline first, and often the outline is what I pitch. And the important thing when you're writing an outline and you're just putting your story together is that it's like an explanation. It's like a potted version of your story. And you have to make sure you're not going, this happens, and then this happens, and then because of that, that happens. And it's just that's just a list of stuff. And what you really want is at every stage you're going, something happened, because of that, a different thing happened, therefore, this happened, and that led to that, but, and you can basically just go, that, but, therefore, and this led to, and that's what stops your story at the sort of skeletal stage, stops it becoming just a list of stuff that happens. It's then you've got a sequence, and you've got a shape and a structure to it, and I think that's really important to bear in mind.
So, I think that's a really good point, and I think B2B marketers can probably borrow a lot of the techniques used by professional script writers to start to plan and frame the stories so that they are engaging rather than the list of things that happen. So I think it's very much worth looking at how professional storytellers go about the actual mechanics of planning the story before the story is even in existence to ensure that the story is as engaging as possible. So if we were going to summarise what we've talked about today and what makes a good story in B2B marketing, I think we want to make it about the customer. We want to cast the customer as the hero. We want to put the customer in a situation where they're facing a problem, and in trying to deal with that problem, they go through a kind of escalating series of conflicts before they get to a resolution to their problem, which is generally the product or service that we're trying to sell to them. And we're also looking at borrowing aspects of classic storytelling, like the three-act structure, like the seven basic plots, like the hero's journey, which we haven't actually talked about, and using techniques like writing an outline before you start writing your script, if it's a video, or you start writing your main ebook or whatever it is that you're creating, to be sure that the story you're telling is as engaging as it can possibly be to your target audience.
Well, that's all we've got time for this episode of the Radix Copycast. You can find Fiona on Twitter via RadixFiona. You can also find James on Twitter via James_blue_cat. You can find Radix on Twitter via RadixCom. Our website is www.radix-communications.com. And the Copycast itself is also available on iTunes. So, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.